Happy Friday, everybody. It is the Information's 411, your weekly podcast brought to you by the reporting folks at The Information. Hope you've all had a good week. My name is Tom Dotan, your faithful work-from-home correspondent. I have got Corey Weinberg on this episode. We're talking work from home. It's the topic that is on everybody's mind after Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, you may remember him, he announced that the company is going to aggressively embrace work from home policies, and through a series of interviews and conversations with the whole company, said that within, I believe, the next 5 to 10 years, half of the company's thousands and thousands of employees will be remote, he predicts. And that has huge implications across the board. So I'm going to talk with Corey all about that. Corey's been following real estate and other related matters for quite some time for us, so he's a good source on this. And then also interesting topic that came up this week was the surprise announcement by Disney's streaming chief, Kevin Mayer, that he is going to be the new U.S. CEO of TikTok. God, it sounds even weird to say just now. But there's a lot going on behind the scenes as to why he made this move, both what it means for Disney and what it means for TikTok and ByteDance, its kind of parent company. So that is today's episode. It's stuffed. It's chock full. And then before I get to my conversation with Corey, who's very patiently waiting on the line right now, I do have an event to plug. On Thursday of next week, our Hong Kong team is going to be interviewing a senior executive from Alibaba about how they survived the pandemic, a rare get for a company that doesn't speak that much to the press. So it's a very exciting conversation led by our fabulous Hong Kong Bureau. They're all awesome out there. And so if you're interested in this talk, I am interested in this talk, you can go to theinformation.com/events. How'd I do, Corey? Did I get it all in there?
That was great. You have a future in podcasting.
Yeah. Don't fire me yet. Okay. So let's
talk. Am I your boss?
I just like approval. I just like regular affirmation that I'm doing a good job.
Yeah, you're doing great. Send Tom emails. Tell him how much you like the podcast. Tom,
right. You understand this generation. We need to be told we're good at every step of the way. Please like and subscribe. Okay, so tell me about Mark Zuckerberg's announcement. It sort of came like a bolt out of the blue, unless you were given pre-warning about it. But what did Mark announce to the world yesterday?
Yeah, it was a little bit out of the blue. Although we've seen now a small parade of tech companies announcing amid the pandemic that they are embracing remote work in different ways. So on Thursday, Mark Zuckerberg made what was on the surface a modest announcement. The details are that the company would begin allowing some high-performing employees to apply to work from home for as long as they'd like, rather than coming into the office. Even after Facebook's offices open up, they could move. They could work from home forever if they'd like. And Facebook would also be opening more satellite offices for engineers in non-coastal cities like Atlanta, Dallas, and Denver. And so opening new satellite offices, that's not like a huge deal, but Facebook is positioning this in a way that has potentially a big impact. So, and that's in part because Mark Zuckerberg wrote, and I quote, "Over the next 5 to 10 years, I think we could have 50% of our people working remotely." Now, there's a whole bunch of questions on what remotely even means, and we can dive into that later on. But the high level is that this is a big deal because it signals that Facebook is going to fully embrace the shift that I think a lot of people in the tech industry are really excited about. There's sort of a vein of the tech world that's really pulling for remote work.
And look, we've seen earlier this month, we saw Jack Dorsey of Twitter and Square saying that there's not any, firm return to work or return to the office date, that they're allowing work from home for the foreseeable future. So obviously the backdrop of this is the pandemic and the shelter in place orders across the country, but is there anything more to it? I mean, why are these companies doing this now?
Yeah, so I think the justification that Zuckerberg and other Facebook executives are putting forward is that they want to be able to attract talent that don't want to move to the Bay Area or New York or Seattle. This is essentially, think of it in the chess as a chess move. It's sort of the war for engineering talent. And that in these last two to three months where everyone's been working from home anyway, it's underlying the fact that Facebook thinks it won't lose much organizationally, or from a business perspective, if it allows more people to work from home.
But basically, like they've seen over the past couple of months that the buildings are still standing, Facebook is still operational. Like they can do it. It's like they've been forced to see if it works, and it did.
Right. I think it's more been the fact that, there was stories written about this kind of as the pandemic was first starting. But of course, people being shut indoors, caused a surge of usage in Facebook's apps and services. More people were using WhatsApp and the core Facebook app, and those things didn't crash. It launched some new features. And I guess there was always some, this was kind of the perfect, sort of A-B test, or I don't know, this was the perfect little laboratory for companies everywhere to experiment with, like, how does productivity suffer, or what are the gains if all of your employees are working from home? And Facebook also, they put it forward another fact on Thursday. You know, they said that employees, at least a significant subset of employees, seem to want this. They said that they surveyed employees and 40% of them said that they were interested in more remote work. And a subset of those people said that they might even move outside of a big city if they were given that opportunity. The justification is essentially that people want this, and it'll help us attract more talent, and we won't lose a whole lot by doing it.
Right. So, I mean, there's so many. Let's pretend that everybody is serious about this, which we don't know yet, right? So far, it's just an announcement and a survey. But if we pretend that, Zuck really is going to allow for this, across the company, and people really will take him up on it, there's obviously huge implications for many different areas of, the company and for cities. I mean, are you really expecting people, or are you? But, are generally experts in this space expecting people to move away from the Bay Area because they have this opportunity that they didn't before?
Yeah, I don't know. There are really no experts in this space right now, because we're dealing with, human behavior, following a once-in-a-century event in a pandemic. There has, of course, been, growing frustration for years now, with the fact that all of the high tech jobs are focused in, kind of these large, expensive coastal U.S. cities, San Francisco, New York, Seattle, increasingly L.A. And I guess we can throw Austin in there as well, even though it's not on the coast. But, are in places where it just doesn't conform with what everybody wants in, a place to live. It's expensive. In San Francisco, there's a ton of complaints about, dealing with dirty streets and homelessness. And, you hear that anecdotally that, okay, all the jobs are here, but maybe people don't really want to be here.
And they haven't always meshed well with these cities. I mean, you've seen that, the predominant demographic of people that work for these tech companies often don't match those of a big urban environment. And, that's sometimes for the worse. It causes gentrification. It causes, the ouster of, a lot of non-white communities from these cities. Right. I mean, there's all kinds of political issues that have cropped up as cities became the hub of tech.
Yeah. And I think Facebook smartly, put this forward in, I think Zuckerberg wrote about this in his Facebook post about the topic, but, you've kind of heard Facebook executives use these lines in the past couple of days, which is the fact that this opens up opportunity, that there are lots of people in cities around the country who would love to work for a well-paying, stable company like Facebook, who don't want to move to one of the cities where it has offices. And that limits, the American economy, that limits Facebook potential. There is certainly, it is not, Facebook is not the first company to say that, we'd be, probably better off, as an American company, if we didn't just employ people in, a handful of already wealthy coastal cities. I think we should really also take stock of the potential downsides here, or at least come at this topic with some caution. You know, so one thing that people have sort of latched onto as the potential, you know, sort of downside of this move, or at least the underpinning of this move, was that Mark Zuckerberg said at an all hands meeting, which was live streamed publicly, which is a thing that they seem to be increasingly doing now.
Very transparent. We love it.
Yeah. I think it's just because all these things get leaked anyway.
But, you're right. I love seeing Mark Zuckerberg's giant floating head in my news feed, knowing that he's doing one of these.
Yeah.
Looks like Zordon. Anyway, go on.
He basically, he said, he got a question. I'm not sure if it was a question or if he just kind of came out and said it. But basically, he said that starting next January, you know, if there are in fact employees that are leaving the Bay Area to go live in, you know, Butte, Montana or something, that the company will, quote, localize everyone's comp. Which he didn't go into what that meant, but, you know, everyone just sort of picked up on that, I think, to say, like, okay, if you're leaving the high cost Bay Area, where, you know, just like every city and like every industry, your job, you know, your salary is often tied to your cost of living. Yeah, you know, then they're going to pay you less
No. I mean, there was like a very punitive edge to the way that he phrased it too, because he was talking about like, if you're not honest about where you are at the moment, where you're basing, you know, your work operations, you will be penalized, or there will be repercussions for it. So
yeah, and it's a bit strange. I mean, it was funny. I did think it was a bit of a misstep for him to, maybe it wasn't a misstep. Maybe it's all part of a cold calculus that he had, but it did kind of ring a little bit of the good PR he was getting at this move, because I think it's very easy to point to that and say, well, like, look, Mark, you're also saving a lot of money by not feeding these people and not shuttling them on a bus. Like, there are cost savings that these employees will be helping Facebook with if they live in a lower cost area. So the punitive nature of it almost, it's not an unusual move to pay someone less if they...
If you want to live in Montana, you get paid like a Montanan.
Right, but for such a wealthy company like
Facebook. Yeah, financially they've been fined by paying people, you know, Bay Area wages. So it does feel a little cheapskatey, but... You know, that's also a recognition, I imagine, of the era that we're in, where companies are unsure of where their businesses are. And if you can cut costs by using something like this, like, why not, right?
No, absolutely. And I think that's going to continue to be, a subject that I think we're going to keep writing about and talking about, particularly, as the economy continues to struggle, and particularly companies that are, facing a hit from the pandemic, you know, there's going to be increasing pressures to outsource workers, and there's just going to be fewer jobs in tech available. You know, this whole era that employees have had, where they basically are in control and they can job hop easily and just keep raising their comp, that era is coming to an end, I think.
So it seems. I mean, like, the last thing I would sort of say on this is it all is something that sounds like it'd be playing out over the next couple of years. So we need to, you know, be cautious and not over, you know, extrapolating what so far has been like a couple weeks worth of announcements to, you know, a mass shift. I mean, we're dealing with people here. They're unpredictable. But it's definitely something to watch very closely, as I imagine you will.
This is a podcast. We over-extrapolate based on a week from
Okay, you're right. You're right. San Francisco is over. The mission is free.
Oh, Jesus. Can I turn the tables on you a little bit? Can we talk Disney
please.
And TikTok?
Please. Turn those tables, Corey. Okay. DJ, turn those tables.
We got a bit of really interesting executive movement this week where you had this name... You know, I'm not a close follower of Disney and TikTok, but I certainly knew the name Kevin Mayer, particularly because he was someone who everyone talked about as being passed over for the Disney CEO role. And it turns out he's leaving Disney. What's the news? What happened this week?
Yeah, talk about a bolt out of the blue. Earlier this week, it came out through a very carefully managed process by the company that Kevin Mayer, who is the head of Disney's streaming division, is going to be taking on the role of U.S. CEO of TikTok and also COO of ByteDance, which is the parent company that owns TikTok. Kevin Mayer is a longtime Disney employee. He's been there since actually the early 90s, as I was looking up his resume the other day. Disney has a lot of people who are lifers at the company, just folks who live and breathe the mouse. And Kevin's definitely one of them. And he, like you mentioned, was someone who people saw as a real potential to be, the Bob Iger replacement. You know, he was kind of the muscle and brains behind the Disney's deal strategy, which has really been like the company's engine over the last decade or so. You know, they have bought Pixar, they bought Marvel, they bought Lucasfilm, and then they also bought assets, major assets of 21st Century Fox. And Kevin was, it depends on who you talk to at the company, but certainly no one's denying that he was a key player, though, some will say maybe Bob Iger was really the shepherd behind it. But regardless, he was the Disney deals guy. When the company kind of reoriented around streaming, when they announced Disney Plus, Kevin was named as the leader of this initiative, and they kind of created this whole segment of the company around him, which is predominantly to, lead Disney's, new era in streaming, but they also kind of folded other businesses underneath it.
That has been like the key strategic bet that Disney has been making over the past few years. And it seems like it's been somewhat successful.
They've gotten what they wanted out of it. I mean, look, they announced Disney Plus, in a very savvy, press events, an investor event last March, so March of 2019. And they put out what they thought the subscriber projections were going to be in 5 years, which the low end of that was 60 million. Well, a couple of weeks ago when they had their earnings call, they said they're already at 54.5 million subscribers to Disney Plus. Wow. So, I mean, they are now, obviously there's a lot of expectation managing that goes into these things, but for them to hit what was, some people thought, an aggressive 5-year target in less than a year, they've knocked it out of the park.
And that was before phase one. Hamilton, right?
Right. And now with Hamilton, they're probably going to get most of the, English speaking world. So
exactly. Okay, why is this guy leaving? He's leading this. Why isn't Disney holding on to Kevin Mayer if he's, a lifer and has been, leading this initiative that's proven fairly successful so far?
Because he wanted something more. Much like America at the turn of the... and I can't make a Hamilton reference there. I don't know it well enough. You probably could. Kevin Mayer wanted, I can't speak to what he wanted, but there was very much an expectation inside the company that he was the leading candidate to get this job, mostly because of how successful his tenure has been.
The Disney CEO job.
Yeah. Bob Iger is stepping down finally after many false attempts to do that at the end of next year. And in February, there was kind of another kind of surprise, abrupt announcement that he had named Bob Chapek, who is the head of parks and resorts, to be immediately named as CEO, and then Bob Iger was stepping into this executive chairman role. And the whole thing was not handled particularly well. I and others have reported that basically Kevin Mayer was informed of this while in the middle of a meeting over at Hulu. He did not have that much advance announcement. Disney was certainly trying to avoid any kind of leaks. But there are people who say that the way that it was handled kind of left a bad taste in his mouth. But also, you know how people are. I mean, if you kind of start to see your success and maybe start to believe the hype, you maybe think, wow, I really do, this was supposed to be my job. Now, to be clear, Kevin Mayer has said in interviews and other outlets that he only took this TikTok job or left Disney because this was just an incredible, amazing opportunity that he couldn't dare pass up. And also, Disney Plus is in such a great place that he felt comfortable stepping away from the company while in this great position. So believe what you want.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Like it was doing so great, they didn't need me anymore.
Right.
So what does this mean for Disney streaming unit going forward, though. I mean, it's still obviously closely watched in both the tech and media worlds. You reported a little bit this week on sort of what happens next to it, right?
Yeah, well, so the interesting thing to me, and this is really, you know, kind of inside baseball for Disney, is that they immediately reorganized his unit. So beyond just streaming and Disney Plus and ESPN Plus and Hulu, which existed under this group, he also had control of the advertising team. They reported up into him. And then also the cable business, which is like ESPN, the business of getting Comcast and Cox to give Disney money for carrying all of those Disney-owned channels, all of that reported up into him, which some people thought was kind of beyond the scope of what, you know, a streaming division really should be doing. And so for reasons that, you know, I think still will be interesting to watch playing out, they immediately moved those over to the TV networks. And, you know, it's debatable as to what the actual impact of this will be, but, you know, there are people who have said in the past that the TV networks were really annoyed by the fact that they didn't have, you know, a central part of their business, basically the advertising that appears next to their programs, reporting up into them. And, you know, some people saw it as kind of Kevin Mayer's empire building within this company to sort of, you know, control a huge amount of revenue. To be clear, you know, we reported in the story that this was not Kevin's decision to have it report into him, that this came from the board and Bob Iger himself. But anyway, that's sort of the nature of disagreement. But it is noteworthy that immediately upon his leaving, they kind of dismantled parts of his division. I don't know if it's going to be a major problem for things. It really is just kind of a line of reporting change right now. But it's definitely worth watching.
Right. Well, it was a smart story. You always got to do the unwinding of the empire story after the executive leaves.
Right. It's very Shakespearean.
Yeah. It was okay. So last thing, what does this mean for TikTok? I mean, you have this new, you know, sort of fairly high profile American executive coming into a company with that is sort of still a bit of a mystery to the rest of the tech world because it's, you know, the power of this company is based in China, but its profile has grown substantially. Its app downloads are growing rapidly, but it's also under these pretty, you know, intense regulatory pressures, you know, in a moment where U.S.-China relations aren't particularly strong. So, how did you read this from a TikTok perspective? Was this a smart hire?
It's fascinating. I mean, that to me is going to be one of the most compelling stories in tech to watch play out over the next couple of years because it is such a hotbed of regulatory issues. TikTok is such an interesting company that is really, I mean, maybe folks at the Hong Kong Bureau would disagree with me on this, but I think it's one of the only Chinese companies to have a true breakout hit in the U.S. And obviously there are, you know, political tensions between the U.S. and China over a number of things. But as a sense of how much of a, you know, hot seat job this is, hours after Kevin Mayer was announced as the CEO of TikTok, Holly, this kind of prominent Republican tech critic, tweeted out like, you know, I'll see you in Senate, sir. It's just like, you know, we're going to haul you and your whole team up in front of a Senate panel to, you know, probably berate you with questions about China and, you know, whether this is a spy app and all kinds of, you know, unrelated things that, you know, Kevin has basically jumped right into. And, you know, there's all kinds of fascinating things that, you know, Kevin is someone who is, you know, made his bones as a deals person at Disney. He never really dealt with the political concerns that Disney had, which, you know, Disney has had many. I mean, they have a huge business in China, but that wasn't ever Kevin's purview. You know, that was much more the purview of Bob Iger or even Bob Chapek as head of parks because Disneyland, you know, Shanghai Disneyland is a huge business for them. So these are all the things that he is not as experienced in that he will have to step into in the next, you know, couple months and years. As he's in this job.
Well, he's got his hands full. It seems like he might be the right person for the job, but also, you know, some of the key things he might need to do aren't necessarily directly in his skill set. But
You know, I will say to his credit, he is someone who has gained skills as he's been at Disney. And there were a lot of people who were thinking this guy had no business being the head of a streaming division, having never led large groups of people. He'd always had kind of a tiny strategic, you know, strategic planning group within the company, but, you know, ended up with thousands of employees and, you know, was successful in getting this thing off. So I'm sure he enjoys the challenge, but this is a different challenge. This is intense.
Right. Yeah. Well, we also have the challenge of a Memorial Day weekend while sheltering in place.
Yeah. No. See, we all face different things to overcome. Any streaming picks, by the way, Corey, to close out this podcast? Anything you recommended people to binge over the long weekend?
I just watched Hulu's Mrs. America with Cate Blanchett as Phyllis Schlafly, sort of a dramatized version of the. Of the feminist movement in the 60s and 70s. Apparently Gloria Steinem said in an interview this week that it was unrealistic. So take that for what you will.
But ouch.
It was a pretty good show. It was from one of the producers of Mad Men. It was pretty good.
Okay, that's pretty good. I can throw out there another Hulu series. We should probably dedicate an episode to this later. Devs? Yeah, I just finished it. Look, there are issues. We should all discuss it at a later date, but it definitely was interesting. One of the more interesting things I've seen in some time.
Have you written about the FX Hulu partnership? That's what those two shows are from. So,
by the way, made for a very bizarre experience trying to find Devs within the app because it's not contained within Hulu Originals. It's contained within the FX on Hulu tab, which is not great design, guys. Anyway, Corey, thank you for joining. This was great, and have a good long weekend, everybody.